Hello, everyone, and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
And we're healthy for now. We're still here at Deutsche Welle, at DW, without COVID-19 in our bodies at this point. So let's celebrate that right at the top here.
I'm positively negative. Let me just put it that way.
Because you've been testing yourself.
I've been testing the bejesus out of myself, and I just can't get the positive.
And that is probably because you've got a kid at home who's stuck at home in quarantine because her kindergarten, is shut down?
That's right. 5 of the 138 kids at her kindergarten have tested positive for the Omicron variant. And five days of quarantine, and then she can test out of there. She could test out today. She's negative. She's been negative the whole time. But she has to wait 5 days, do the quarantine, and then she can test out as of next Tuesday.
Okay. So that's, by the way, to get really detailed here, that's different because you live in a different state than we do here.
Yeah.
And here it actually, oddly, happens a bit quicker. Sorry to say that about your state, but you have the pool test first, some kids positive, and then there are all these PCR tests. And last couple of weeks, my kids have been had cases, plural, in their classrooms every week. And then by the next morning, they're usually back in there.
Yeah, depending on where they sit.
Yeah.
I live in the state of Rhineland-Palatinate, and no offense to Rhineland-Palatinate as a state, but the way things roll there, it's a bit more conservative, a bit more behind the times.
One could say. So you mentioned that 5 kids in your kindergarten have tested positive.
Yeah.
There's some new data that suggests that there are probably more who are positive but who just weren't caught as positive by those rapid tests.
Because they don't work on kids or what?
Yeah, that's the conclusion, basically. Well, they don't work as well. Of some new research that's been published, the researchers out of Cologne, Germany, together with the University of Manchester, they were actually looking at 17 studies that had happened elsewhere involving 6,000 children, kids from the U.S., Spain, and Germany in this case. So if a child's going into a kindergarten and that child is infected with COVID-19, but is asymptomatic, isn't sniffling, sneezing, has no effects of this, there's only a 56% chance, according to this data, that a rapid test would catch that infectious child. So every second child walking through the doors would make it through the doors. One thing to...
And that's only if they're asymptomatic?
If they're asymptomatic.
Now, as soon as they start showing symptoms, does it change?
It does, but also the data here also isn't very good. So if they're symptomatic, I don't know exactly how they define that, but I'm assuming, runny nose, maybe very light fever or something. There, the rapid test worked in 64% of the cases, meaning in about one in every third child who, let's say the parents think, oh, they've just got a cold. Look, I think it's fine. Let's send them to school. One out of every three of those children who's positive with COVID-19 will not be caught by the antigen test. So, they're not catching all of them. You cannot say that these tests are going to, with any degree of certainty, make sure that inside the classroom, the kids who do have COVID-19 are being tested for it and kept out of the classroom. And to add another layer of negativity to this, this data came from, I think it was up to May 2021.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's not at all Omicron specific.
There's no Omicron, in there. No okay. Omicron in there. So that has probably made things worse.
Yeah.
One last, I guess, to put the only positivity on this I can. When it comes to a positive result, so kids going into the classroom, gets swabbed, they put it in the rapid test. 15 minutes later, 2 red lines. This kid's positive for COVID-19. One concern I've had as a parent, because my kids' classrooms keep getting closed. Right?
False positive or what?
Yeah. How many false positives are happening? How many times are they saying there's a COVID case here when in fact there isn't? Turns out, if it says it's positive, those were 99% accurate. Which again, if you've got a kindergarten with 138 kids, that's not good news either. But generally speaking, that is something that you can believe in. Again, we don't have data on Omicron and how that has changed the equation. But I guess you can say, like, if your kid's going into a classroom, they're going to be uncaught cases of COVID-19 going in there with them.
It would be important at this point to know how it works on Omicron, given that it's pretty much dominant everywhere. But soon, that might no longer be the case.
And you mean that in a good way or in a bad way?
Because there's a new Omicron. It's called Omicron Stealth.
Okay, hold on a sec. We talked about Remember Deltacron? We talked about that a week or two ago, it turned out to be a lot of hype, and it was nothing. It is nothing. That's what we said.
No. This is an actual substrain of Omicron. There are 3 substrains. There's BA1, 2, and 3. And Omicron, as such, is BA1.
Mm-hmm.
And BA2, according to Denmark...
Which has good data.
Which is one of the only countries in the world that sequences big time and shares its sequencing with GIS or GISAID. Half of the cases in Denmark are already BA2, or this stealth Omicron. The reason why it's called that, because it's harder to detect. A PCR test knows Omicron. It can tell Omicron based simply on the PCR capabilities. It cannot test or it cannot see Omicron BA2.
It's and the stealth Omicron. Do you have any idea at this point? Because I've seen none of this data. Mm-hmm. Typically, if a mutation or a new variant or a sub-strain, whatever you want to call this, if it's taking over or if it is truly a variant of concern, typically you can see it start to march or to start taking more and more cases compared to the other ones. Is that out there?
Within the past week, let's look at Denmark specifically here because that's one of the only countries where we have this information. The case levels are rising again because it hit its peak and was starting to come down. Mm-hmm. And now the case levels are rising and over half of the cases are BA2.
Then my next question.
That is a concern if you look at what some of the top virologists out in the world are saying. This guy Peacock, you know him?
Yes.
We have quoted him on this show.
Flu Peacock, we talked about him. He was the one, going back to Deltacron, he was the one who was like, look, calm down, stop talking about Deltacron. It's not a thing. It was a lab error. Take a deep breath. And so...
He has a much, much different tone with regard to BA2, that it should be a concern. As a matter of fact, it looks like he thinks the WHO should actually call this thing a variant of concern because of the way it's spreading across countries. And that, you know, that would be the definition of an epidemic, right? If it's all the way to Denmark already and it's taking over, it's in the process of becoming dominant there.
My guess is that it were too early in the development of this BA2
substrain
or stealth, let's call it stealth Delta. What a horrible,
stealth
scary...
Stealth Omicron.
Sorry. We're talking about so much today. Stealth Omicron.
It is important to quote the National Serum Institute in Denmark saying that there is absolutely no reason for alarm because despite the rise in case numbers, the hospitalizations are the same. So flatline on the hospitalizations. In terms of severe infection, there is no reason to think that this new Omicron is more dangerous.
Okay.
It's just taking over in Denmark. And yeah, as one of the countries in the world that does share its sequencing data, that is significant.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is.
Did you have anything else?
No, just, come on, why? We were just talking about Omicron peaking. It was going down the back slope. We were hopping on the toboggans and sliding downhill in a good way, downhill.
Yeah, I do not know you to be a naive person, Connor, to think that Omicron was going to be the end.
No,
You are hopeful.
I'm hopeful. And a little time in between, a little time to process Omicron, like really sleep on it and think about what it meant when it was there before hopping on the next roller coaster ride.
We would be able to do that if genomic supervision or genomic surveillance didn't exist. I mean, this used to be like a backwater, super niche virological or epidemiological tool. But now it's an important thing. Because of it, we know about these substrains.
Yeah. And I don't know, at a dinner party or a round of drinks, you would have had to explain what your job even is. And now everyone's like, oh, thank you so much. Do you work in Munich?
Yeah.
That's where they're...
I discovered the new Omicron.
Wow.
Hey, can you pass the cocktail weenies?
Oh, yuck. I've never liked those. Okay, so speaking of Omicron, which at this point, most people tend to assume that you're going to get Omicron or something like it at some point. WHO predicting every second person here in Europe. But long-term, you can assume that you're going to get this.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, it makes sense to wonder about some of these things, brain fog that we haven't talked about for a while, to wonder how will that affect us? Because
even from Omicron?
Even from Omicron. Now, I'm about to get into a study that doesn't directly address Omicron, but what it does address is a mild COVID-19 infection, which is what Omicron, for a lot of people who have some sort of prior immunity, is, right? And so I think that's the closest direct comparison we have at this point. So to start off, Gabe, I'm going to ask you to memorize 7 words in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Peas, monkey, dress, aubergine, mouse, proposal, direction.
Peas, monkey, dress, aubergine, proposal, dress, monkey.
Start going backwards, and then well, I think you did get to seven.
Omicron?
No. Okay, so direction was lost in there, and aubergine.
I said aubergine.
No, I'm sorry. You missed mouse. Nope. Our technician is confirming it here. You missed mouse in direction. This is similar to some of the tests that were recently given, or actually not recently. This is data collected from May. Early May in 2021.
Yeah.
This was the kind of test that was given to people to figure out, you know, how is their brain working? How was their brain working after a COVID-19 infection?
But what are they comparing that against?
Because
you can't.
Yeah.
You can't go and test them before they got brain fog.
No, you can't do undo a COVID-19 infection. No, so what they would have been comparing this against is kind of, you know, what's the baseline? What do people, if you give them this kind of test, in a typical, you know...
What does the population normally get?
Yeah, and specifically this part of the population, the average age was 29 years old. It was roughly 150 people, so not that many. And they skewed...
What was the average score, actually? I need to know this now.
I kind of cheated and made it easier for you. So I think they gave them up to 20 words. That was part of the linguistic test. And what they showed there is that people performed all right on that kind of stuff. This was Oxford, the Department of Experimental Psychology... and clinical neurosciences, and they're looking at a couple things here. What's their memory like? And here we're talking about working memory, short-term memory.
Mm-hmm.
What's their episodic or episodic memory like? So how can you recollect things that happened a while ago?
Mm-hmm.
And then basically focusing on the day-to-day life planning. There was a huge list of tests. It was exhausting. They had spatial tests. They had red circles popping up on the screen. You had to touch them real quick with your finger. So sort of motor skills, all sorts of tests. Where are these people? So here's the bad news. Or actually, I'll start with the good news. The good news was their working memory. So this is the short-term thinking, kind of the thing that you did. And their planning was still good after a COVID-19 infection. That was fine.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news was their episodic memory up to 6 months later was not as good. So recalling events from the past, it was just foggy. And also attention span up to 9 months later was not as good. You don't have the ability to focus on one thing for as long, up to 9 months after a mild COVID-19 infection. And again, keyword mild. That's why I'm trying to find a way to, or that's why I'm sort of comparing it to Omicron. And I'm not sure that that's appropriate or even good, but it's something I'm thinking about because if I get a mild Omicron infection, then how is that going to affect me?
Well, that answer is what the one that most people would want to know.
How's it going to affect me?
Especially if it's a mild infection.
Yeah. So this data would indicate, again, it only went up to May 2021, that you can expect some attention span issues for up to 9 months, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
You can expect some episodic memory issues for up to 6 months. And again, actually, it may be worse than this because they're talking about 29-year-olds. That's a fit, young group of people.
Yeah.
And not all of us are that age anymore. Maybe it's worse or maybe it's better. I don't know.
But probably worse.
Yeah. Here's the really good news from Professor Masood Hussein. He was one of the authors involved. He said, "We don't understand the mechanisms that cause these cognitive deficits, but it is very encouraging to see that these attention and memory issues basically return largely to normal in most people we tested by 6 to 9 months after infection."
Okay, so take some solace from this study that even if you have these issues, if you experience some brain fog and some memory problems, that they will go away by 9 months?
That there is, according to this data,
generally,
that in most people we tested, as they're saying, they demonstrated good recovery over time. For anyone who wants to get more information on that, it's the title of the study. It's called Rapid Vigilance and Episodic Memory Decrements in COVID-19 Survivors. Decrements was a new word for me. Brain communications.
How many words did I get again?
You got 5 out of 7.
5 out of 7. Okay, can I try you? I've just written 7 words now.
Okay, just to be clear, though, this is now not a direct comparison because I had 7 nouns for you, which I would argue are easier than adjectives or adverbs.
Okay, well, then I got to change my list. Can you bear with me for
a second? Just give them to me. Just give them to me. I'm going to try to go Boris the Brain on this. That was one of our earlier episodes with the memory master, Boris the Brain. Yeah.
Boris Nikolai, what was his last name? Conrad, if memory serves. Current. Obfuscate. Area, car, sloth, beneficial, tinnitus.
Current? Oh, no. current obfuscate. Now I'm going to go backwards. Beneficial tinnitus, sloth. What was in the middle there? That's it. That's all I got. I missed the middle one.
Area and car.
Car. I wouldn't have
See,
gotten...
the easy one. You got obfuscate and tinnitus?
I got locked into car? That. And that sloth. That obfuscated sloth.
All right, we tied 5-5.
5-5. Okay. That's what we got for today. The only thing I want to mention at the end here, there is a headline going around the web, and it's based on good information. The good information is from the CDC in the United States, based on data from California and the U.S. state of New York. And what that data shows is that if you were unvaccinated and had had a COVID-19 infection, you were less likely to get the Delta variant than somebody who had been double vaccinated.
That the immunity you got from an infection was better than the vaccines.
The double vaccination. Again, not a triple, but a double.
Okay.
This is Delta.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true. And I don't need to go into all the numbers here, but for example, it was roughly, let's say, if you were vaxxed twice, you had a 5 times lower chance of getting it than somebody who's totally unvaxxed. But if you were recovered, you had something anywhere from a 15 to 29 times lower chance. That's okay.
If it were only about immunity, then I guess.
Right.
But what about the consequences of getting a COVID-19 infection?
Exactly. That's the issue. This is nonsense, because if you've had to go through the infection, you've already done an act of brutality on your body that shouldn't have happened in the first place.
And on society?
To give one example, new research on stillbirths happening at a far higher rate, for people who were unvaccinated and then got infected during pregnancy. This is one of the consequences. And the last thing to say about it is that those two groups we just discussed, vaxxed or unvaxxed, were still lower than vaxxed and then infected. So you're still better off getting vaccinated. And then if you happen to get an infection anyway, that is actually the highest amount of protection that data shows.
The true boost, yeah.
So no, it is not the case that, hey, look at me here. I didn't get vaccinated. I got infected. And that's why I had a better chance with Delta. No, that's not the way to approach it. Get vaccinated and everyone is better off in every metric.
Okay, let's put this thing to bed. Any questions about anything we've said today? And it was a long one. Let us know at sudw.com.